Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast that explores the more esoteric corners of the Star Wars galaxy. As always, I am one of your hosts, Jedi Master John Mills, and with me as always is my very dear friend, Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. Matt, how you doing today?
Doing well. It's great to be back here. We've faced all sorts of trade federation, and I mean, we have been aggressive negotiating our way out of so many things. I can't believe we finally had enough time to sit down and record this podcast.
Folks, you don't understand. We even had to bribe a Toydarian to get here. And just to bring you a nice, piping hot, fresh, aggressive negotiations. But also, before we get into this week's question, I want to point out that, as always, people can help the show. Help the Nerd Party Network by going to lootcrate.com/nerdparty and entering the code nerdparty and enter the code nerdparty. And you can get wonderful things shipped to you every single month. Little Pandora's boxes of nerdy wonder and wonderment. And so do us a favor, go on over, support the show, support the network, and you will continue to get wonderful quality entertainment like you've come to expect. Like this week's episode, Matthew, where I'm going to ask you a question, and this is based on something you said in passing in a past episode that we have talked about, where you said in reference to something having to do, I believe it was with the Obi-Wan and Anakin comic book, where you said very quickly, you said, well, and now it's canon. And I've been chewing that over in my head. And the first thing I'm going to throw out there is I'm going to ask you a very simple question that's probably got a complicated answer. You say, well, now it's canon. My question back to you is it really canon?
Well, that is a good question. I mean, as far as we know, and as far as the Lucasfilm story group is concerned, at this moment, they consider, you know, the comics, the books, and what happens on TV and film. Now, let me preface that by saying it's not the Lego show that they're doing, the Freemakers. That's not considered canon, even though they work within canon as much as possible. It's not actually considered canon, but Rebels, Clone Wars, and of course what we see, episodes, Rogue One, all of that is considered canon. So it's canon until they say it's not, I guess would probably be where I'd come down. You know, I don't know how long it will last to have the EU kind of extraneous materials like books and comics to actually be considered canon. I guess it's until a filmmaker or whatever wants to write that over. I don't know.
But see, that's really what spurs my question is, I think you have a valid point. Until a filmmaker says they don't want this to apply to their film, then it can stand. As so long as it's not in contrast with anything, because it's all a connected universe, it's all done with very deliberate moves and steps to make it a franchise that is all connected, that's all tied together like the Marvel movies. Now, Star Wars sort of lends itself to that. It had its problems in the earlier expanded universe as to what was canon and what wasn't, and those sorts of things. What were the official texts of Star Wars? But my question is, Pablo Hidalgo said on Twitter at one point, he talked about the origin of throwing away the old expanded universe. And he said that there was a conversation that they had had earlier about the opportunity to freeze it in amber, put it in the past, and start fresh, start anew with much more deliberate intent.
Right.
Now, given that they have done that, didn't they have an even better opportunity to completely disregard the idea of quote unquote canon and say to their audience, we're going to continue to give you stories in the vein of Brian Daley, in the early 80s, or Lando Calrissian and the Star Cave of Thon Boca, those sorts of things. But we're not going to we're not going to lean on these materials to supplement the story. Do you support their decision to make a connected universe, or I'm starting to get the feeling of they should have just thrown away the idea of a connected universe and just said, you know what, we're going to release stuff and just have fun with it. And if you want to ignore something, great. And if you want to accept it, great.
I have a hard time with this sometimes, and the reason is what we got with, say, The Force Awakens. And, you know, you really, if you wanted the whole story, you needed to see other things. You needed to read other things. If you really wanted to know the background and what was going on, I mean, you needed that other stuff to feel like you got a full story. And that was a frustration to me. You know, with the comics and stuff, there are things happening in the comics. I'm like, really? We're going to say that's canon? Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think the Darth Vader canon started off very strong and has slowly slid into some very strange areas.
Sure.
That I'm having a hard time stomaching necessarily as Star Wars.
You mean a half Mon Calamari, half General Grievous, saber-wielding, not Jedi, who challenged Vader? Did you have trouble with that one, Matthew?
Yes, that was part of what I had trouble with. You know, the Obi-Wan and Anakin comic. You know, I liked the interpersonal relationship stuff that was happening there. I liked the discussion of Anakin and where he was at that point, his relationship with Palpatine. All of those things were great, but the planet they visit,
yeah,
not Star Wars, but, you know, even in the strange places we visited in the Clone Wars, I think some of the strangest places, like Umbara, was a very pushing the envelope of kind of it meant to be Star Wars. But this, you know, had blimps, and it just kind of felt like it fell out of the book Stardust and not Star Wars. And so it was just, those are the kind of things where I'm thinking to myself, wouldn't it be better, as you said, to just have the comics and those kind of things be almost an EU, where it's, we're just telling stories because we love these characters, we're trying to honor the characters, but they're not canon.
Right.
You know, and we don't feel like they need to be canon. They're just great stories to tell about characters we love. In a lot of the ways that the Star Trek books were always just great stories about the characters you love, so you got more of them.
Yes. And that's exactly the strength of the Marvel comics back in the 80s, was you got your monthly fix of the characters, and there were some really wacky, weird, out there sort of storylines, and then there were some really amazingly Star Wars-esque, like, stuff that I would argue even shaped the direction that the Clone Wars later took, you know, in there, like when Archie Goodman was working on it. But I want to come back to what you said about The Force Awakens. Is one of the more fun things growing up as a kid, when the original movies were first coming out, or even when the prequels came out, was in between the movies, you didn't know anything official. Was there no reliance on outside stuff, but again, we've taken for granted how much we did not know between Star Wars and Empire. Who was this emperor of which Vader spoke? Who was this, you know, how big was the Empire? Where was Vader flying off to? Was the Empire dead when the Death Star blew up? All of these sorts of questions were out there, and there was nothing answering, you know, with any sort of definitive nature, anything like that. It was just comics, and it was like, well, you know, yeah, we're not going to really touch on that big stuff. So do you think that the era of the connected universe has crippled us to the point in an imaginative sense? Wouldn't it have been more fun to know that there was no connected universe coming for The Force Awakens and be left with a couple of years where, just like the original trilogy, wait a minute, what happened? What's going on? And we would have known, though, that in the sequel, or even in the Star Wars story movies, they would have taken the time to fill in those gaps. They would have waited and given it story development time for the movies instead of setting it up so that, you know, there's almost this codependent relationship that's based on marketing with everything. So is that the hindrance? Have we been conditioned to expect this, you know, connected universe stuff? And at the same time, does it rob some of the fun between Force Awakens and whatever episode 8 is going to be called?
I think that the connected universe mentality and the series, films, have begun to become so much like serialized television
mm-hmm.
instead of like actual films.
Yep.
That we are losing what it means to tell a full story. And I think that's, you know, that's a frustrating thing because, and I think that's one of the things that made the original Star Wars films work. I think it's what makes the prequels work, is that George approaches each one as its own film.
Mm-hmm.
And that film needs to tell mostly complete story. You know, obviously there's threads that continue on to the next movie, but you don't sit there the whole time wondering about all this extraneous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What's giving to you is what you need to know and for it to make sense. I think The Force Awakens feel different is that you got that feeling when you watched it that something was missing. Like you were kind of missing some kind of setup for the universe. You were missing certain clues about, you know, what was, you know, who was who and what was what and what all these words meant, you know, because think about this. When Star Wars comes out, the 77, we know what the words empire mean. We
yep.
know what the words rebel mean
yeah.
and all of that stuff. There was no need to explain it. But you get to The Force Awakens and you have this thing called the Republic, but we already kind of know what the Republic is, but not what the Republic is because we've seen it before now with the prequels. So is this the same kind of Republic? Is it different? You know, so
right.
you have all these questions because you have this universe. Same thing with what is this resistance? Like, what does that mean? What's the First Order mean? And the reason we ask all those questions is because of what's come before. So those questions, I feel like, do need to be answered in some semblance of a way or make somebody comfortable with what those words mean other than just throwing words out there and not really telling your audience what's going on. And I think that's where sometimes the connected universe stuff, I think, maybe makes storytellers a little bit lazier today.
Well, I think that if they had chosen any other word than resistance, I think that that was, or even included a line where they said, oh, we're a resistance because we're behind enemy lines or something like that. Like it's easily solved by either a different term chosen or just a single line of dialogue. I've come to peace with it. I get what they were going for sort of thing. I just think that it's an unfortunate word choice. But in terms of like what you address with Lucas, you know, approaching each movie as an individual story that's connected as opposed to a connected universe, I think also what's going to be missed is you have this story group dictating things, and I think you calling it out as a serialized thing is accurate because you have this group steering where everything is going as opposed to the filmmakers coming in and, you know, really doing their own thing. Although, I mean, Abrams did definitely exert his own influence on, you know, maybe they just have major story points or whatever, but the larger point is Lucas gave himself time for course corrections because, of course, one of the things that fans and anti-fans like to point out about Lucas is, oh, well, you know, if he knew they were brother and sister, they never would have kissed in Star Wars and Empire. Or if he knew this, he never would have done that. Or if he knew this and he never would have done that. And yeah, there are definitely some certain point of view, you know, margins of call that he took, where he said, well, I never said specifically that. And so you right. had to be like, okay, I get what you're doing here. But he gave himself time for course correction. I mean, do you think that after the reception of The Phantom Menace, which was criminally wrong of people to tear it apart the way that they did, but, you know, there was definitely course correction, but people were pressuring him to shoot all three movies simultaneously, just shoot them one through the next. And he gave himself room as a storyteller to say, no, I want to course correct if something isn't accepted. You know, like, I guarantee you that the reception of Jar Jar led to the lessening of his role throughout the rest of the story. I guarantee you he throttled back on that. But, you know, by and large, I think that there is, I think, a sticky wicket to be in now, because it's one thing for there to be a story group, you know, saying in the movies, this is where we're headed, this is what we're going to do, and that you have to color between these lines. But to add the connected universe on there, I mean, is Star Wars descending into Star Trek territory? Where, you know, I mean, this is something we've sort of lamented both here and on your show on the Trek FM network, 602 Club, where we're no longer in the territory of the work of a single artist. You know, like, is the downfall of this going to be the canon, the reliance on the canon? Is that what's going to cause ultimately fans to start disconnecting from things? Which I know seems an absurd question after Force Awakens makes $2 billion worldwide and reignites tons of people's love for Star Wars. But, you know, now you have this expectation. You know, people, I think, discount that Star Wars was a huge hit. It was the biggest hit in the history of anything. And then Empire wowed everybody because it did something nobody expected. It went in directions that were not foreseen. Are we losing that spontaneity now with the canon?
That's a really good question. And, you know, part of it is, you know, just think about where the Star Wars comic is taking place right now, you know, between episodes 4 and 5, and just filling up, I feel like, every second of that time period.
Right.
You know, and so that there's really no... It's the kind of thing that, again, it's happened in Star Trek books with the 5-year mission, in the sense that, like, every second of that 5-year mission, that original 5-year mission, is accounted for, I feel like, at this point, with all the different books we've had.
Right.
And I feel like the same thing is going to start to happen to that very small window between episodes 4 and 5 and then episodes 5 and 6, you know. And you're not really leaving these characters a lot of places to move, because part of it is that the big life-changing events are the films.
You know,
those are the things that really make the huge difference in the characters' lives. You know, the frustrating thing about any of the books or the comics, for the most part, is that there's no real actual change. Everything kind of gets put back in the box once the comic is done, unless you have something incredible like Dark Disciple, where you're telling a story because that's going to be the place that they tell the story. Something actually important for a character happens, like, spoiler alert, if you haven't read it, but the death of...
Right.
You know, or the way in which Bloodline told the story of Princess Leia and how she becomes... General Leia, basically, what leads her to want to start the resistance. I think that's an important storyline. That's a mile marker there. So those kind of things, when that stuff happens, it's a big deal. I think, honestly, for the most part, you're more affected in the comics at this point because you're churning out so many stories.
Right.
It's not as bad with the books yet, even though I'd say, like, you know, the Tarkin book was okay. You know, it wasn't
The Targaryen book felt like something that they had carried over from the old EU, in a sense. Like, they had always sort of planned it, and then they just sort of course-corrected a little bit to, you know, put it in the new, whatever, timeline or whatever. How would you fix it? How would you fix it in terms of making it... We have to live with this canon. We have to live with the way things are. George Lucas isn't coming back. We're not going strictly off of his ideas anymore. And this is all going to be a connected universe. How do you fix it?
I think we need to kind of be careful with Star Wars. And I think we need to say that less is more with the canon right now. And I think we also should say that for the most part, Star Wars is a more visual medium.
Mm-hmm.
So the animated series like Rebels and Clone Wars and the films and the Star Wars story films really need to be the focus. And then the next focus should probably be really good quality books.
Yeah.
You know, get the best authors out there to come in and do cool stories with characters. Do what they're doing with Rebels right now, and you're going to bring in Thrawn for the first time into canon. You're going to legitimize him and say this character totally exists in Star Wars, and then you bring Timothy Zahn in to tell the background story for him before he gets into Rebels. So, you know, well, that kind of stuff, yeah, I think is really, really cool. I think to me the biggest area that needs the most caution is the comic books, and making sure that the comic books feel like Star Wars, tell important stories, so it's worth buying an issue every month or, you know, every other week or whenever they come out, and to make sure that those stories that just feel Star Wars, you know?
No, I think you're definitely onto something. I think that you said it best, where it's you have to be careful with it. And I think that what they need to do is they need to get away. They won't, but they need to get away from the idea of a monthly comic book series. I think what they need to do is they need to do one shots, like, you know, supersized stuff, which, you know, I mean, with digital stuff, I mean, I don't know how many people are even buying physical comics anymore. I know that there are some out there, but most of us are buying digitally now. So do one shots, do 64 page something that feels like it can have impact. The novels, I think you correctly call out the comics, but I think the novels are really the place where I get most nervous, because the old EU, that was the problem, was volume. There is no way to maintain a consistent level of quality when you're churning out that much. Like McDonald's, I'm sure, when it was a smaller chain, those hamburgers were amazing. Right. But nowadays, McDonald's is something you do when you, okay, yeah, I'm on the road and I don't have time to really pull over, so I'm going to, you know, duck in the drive-thru real quick.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I just don't want to see it become McDonald's again. I just really wish they could just come out with a statement where they would say, you know what, we're going to repeat what we said earlier. None of this is ironclad. We're not going to touch anything that is ironclad, that is, you know, big in the movies. I would therefore move the comics and even some of the novels away. Some of the best EU efforts, in my opinion, have always been, will always be, the stuff where they focus on the periphery characters. Get your focus off of the main characters. Move away from them. Don't deal with them unless it is something like Bloodline, where it is a huge event. Look at how great Lost Stars was, right? There was, and those were characters we'd never met before. And it was amazing.
Yeah.
That is the type of book that they should be making. That's the type of comic book they should be making. And, you know, I mean, that's my two cents on it. I think we're both sort of in agreement with that, though.
Well, and I'd say with Lost Stars, what was so wonderful about that and what made it so special is that not only were they giving you new characters that you loved because it was so well written, but they were telling you a story in a way that you'd never had it told before, and expounding on the galaxy of Star Wars from the point of view of the Empire. And that's what made it just so fascinating, is that all of those things were working in concert together to make it special.
Sure.
And like you said, the author Claudia Gray was able to capture the spirit of Star Wars characters and create new ones that you immediately latched onto. And I think that's probably one of the hardest things to do. You know, I don't envy J.J. Abrams having to try and create new characters for Star Wars as iconic as all the ones that we know.
Right.
They did it. I mean, I think both you and I agree. The best thing about The Force Awakens were some of those new characters, like Rey, like Finn, like Poe.
Yep.
You know,
so General Hux. You got to give love to General Hux.
I got to give love to General Hux.
And as much as I didn't love him at first, I got to give love to Kylo Ren. He's kind of, he has worked his way into my heart, man.
Kylo, for me, is still a little bit more on the fence, but I think probably he'll win me over as we move forward in the films. It's just one of those things where I'm just waiting for myself to get there, and that's fine.
I hear you.
You know, I think that's what makes it great, though. He's intriguing enough, so I care.
Right.
So I think that's a really big deal, and I want to call out a book here, The Crimson Corsair and the Lost Treasure of Count Dooku.
Yes.
And the reason I mention that is because it was something that you mentioned, the idea of characters that are on the side.
Yep.
And I think what made that book so special for both of us is that it was a character that all we saw of them was in the background in The Force Awakens. But what made it so special is the way that they use that character to connect to some other things that we really love
yes.
in Star Wars. And they use this know-nothing background character to do it. And that was what was fantastic about it. And so I think, like you said, you can do that with these background and with these side characters, explore them in ways that you obviously will probably never get on screen.
Yeah.
That's okay. But the book is the perfect place to do that, to add some, like, you know, I mean, that's what they did with those books, you know, The Tales of the Bounty Hunters and all that kind of stuff. Really great job. And I think that we can definitely make that happen with these books and with these characters and make them something really special to say, hey, I want to really continue watching this.
And you know what? I completely agree with you, although I will take the opportunity to kick Tales of the Bounty Hunters on the way out the door here, because Journeyman Protectorate Jaster Mareel will forever live in my heart as the most reviled character creation in the history of any expanded universe. But hey, that's beside the point. But do you know what people can do to help others explore Star Wars, especially the nooks and crannies of Star Wars as we do, is to go over to iTunes and give us a review and a star rating, we're not telling you to give us anything in specific, but give us a star rating and review, and you will instantly enter yourself into a contest for a special little bundle of stuff that we have. What are we offering in our review contest, Matt?
Well, we have some things that came in my Smuggler's Bounty Funko box.
Yes.
And we've got some great little nuggets for you. We've got a ball cap that has C-3PO on it. Fantastic ball cap. Really like it. And you've also got a Jabba the Hutt mug from Pop Funko, which it's just fantastic. I mean, who doesn't want to drink their coffee? Some Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah. drink coffee out of his skull.
That's right. That's right. So, and you can actually see both of these on our Facebook page at facebook.com/thenerdparty. So you can actually check it out. I took a picture of them so you can actually see what you'd be winning. And we'd really appreciate it. We actually got a great new 5-star review. We're so appreciative of that. And it means so much to us that people are willing to just, you know, to give a little bit of their time to give us reviews. And it really does help with the show. It helps people find the show as they look in iTunes. You know, there are a lot of places you can go for Star Wars podcasts. We appreciate you coming here to Aggressive Negotiations. And if you liked Aggressive Negotiations and just want more people to find that, those iTunes reviews really do help. So, yeah, head on over, and you can be entered to win, and we'd love for you to be the person that wins.
And you know what I would love people to do is I would love them to harass you online as much as you harass me. So where can people find you online, Matt?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me on the Trek FM network doing a few different shows. I do The Orb with Chris Jones, where we talk about Deep Space Nine. I also do a show called Literary Treks with Dan Gunther and Bruce Gibson, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek, as well as getting a chance to interview the authors, which is a lot of fun. I also, of course, do our General Geek show, the 602 Club, where we're talking about all the other fandoms that we love that don't have anything to do with Star Trek. So be sure to check that one out. And John, I know that people love harassing you on Twitter. I've seen it. In fact, I think you even have a stalker.
I do.
Which is fantastic.
I know.
If somebody wants to stalk you, where are the places online that they can do that?
Well, if they want to stalk, they can go down to their local police station and discuss harassment laws. But they can also find me on Twitter at Kessel Junkie. And there are a couple of podcasts I'm on. I'm on Stage 9 with Mike Schindler over on the Trek FM network, where we talk about Star Trek creators creating things that aren't Star Trek. It's actually a really cool show. And I am constantly harassing my pal Craig over on Words with Nerds, a delightful little podcast that talks about just about everything under the sun, honestly. So, you know what? That's where they can find us. You can find the show on Twitter at The Jedi Masters, because that's who's talking to you right now. And as Matt mentioned earlier, you can find us at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And you can find us at TheNerdParty.com, along with the other great shows like Nerd Nuptial, Senate Floor, Filibuster, all of those great things on the Nerd Party Network. And I think, Matthew, we've only got one more thing to say this week. I think it's time we close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.